Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Biotest full year number 2018 analyst conference. We're happy that you joined us today. It will be Michael Ramos to give you an overview of the financials, and then Bernard Ihmer, the overview of the portfolio. May I hand over to Michael?
Yes. Good morning also from my side, and for our guests who listen later on to the podcast, just give the explanation that today we have Girls' Day here in Germany, and so I would say a warm welcome to our special guest, Valentina. Herzlich willkommen in our press and analyst conference this year. Yeah. The year 2017 has been, of course, 2018, sorry, has of course been characterized by the takeover of CREAT or Tianjin at the end of January 2018. All those resulting activities have also then influenced also our numbers. I will point out to you where you will see that and recognize what has happened as a consequence of the takeover. The first publication of Tianjin in the beginning of February was that they announced that they intend to conclude a domination and profit and loss transfer agreement with Biotest AG. That was more tactical move in order to freeze the share price development, because up to this beginning of February, you know, there was some kind of speculation going on if there would be a squeeze out, and therefore the increase in share price was evident. They then announced that they would consider to conclude a domination and profit and loss share, profit and loss transfer agreement. After having done some calculations, they thought it might be not such a good idea. Up to now, we have not concluded a domination agreement between Tianjin and Biotest AG. Instead, a couple of weeks later, Shanghai RAAS, which is also controlled by CREAT, which is the ultimate owner of Biotest as well. Shanghai RAAS, which is a publicly listed company in Shenzhen, announced that they would increase their capital and would issue new shares against cash or against a contribution in kind. As a contribution in kind, Biotest was designed to be part of this capital increase and should be contributed into Shanghai RAAS. This announcement is still valid but has not implemented yet. Some of you have probably seen that in the meantime, Grifols has contributed its diagnostic division partly to Shanghai RAAS. Grifols is also now second-largest shareholder of Shanghai RAAS. CREAT is still the biggest shareholder of Shanghai RAAS. We know from CREAT, which is, as I said, also controlling us in the end, they have still the plan that we will be also part of Shanghai RAAS in the future. This announcement, which was done in March, is still valid, but it has been a little bit delayed due to the fact that Grifols was a little bit faster than we probably, and they contributed parts of their diagnostic division into Shanghai RAAS, and maybe Biotest will be then contributing in the second step. Now, if you look at the financials, you will see that we ended the year with 400 million in revenues and sales, which is 5.9% more than the year before in 2017, with 378 million. If we deduct all operating costs and expenses, we ended up with an operating profit, earnings before interest and tax, of 10.6 million, 19 million more than the year before. 2017 was, of course, influenced by the human albumin recall, and that was the reason why it was in 2017 a loss of -9.3 million, 2018 +10.6 million. Of course, pay interest and taxes and other fees as well. You see that we spent 23.5 million compared to 7.1 million in the year before. One of the biggest issues in this 23.5 numbers is a position for prepayments and waiver fees, because our banks, as a consequence of the change of control, had the opportunity to terminate all loans and credit arrangements we had, and they have been terminated, and we have paid the prepayment fees for that. This number, all in all, 9 million, is included in this -23.5 million. That turned the profit on the operating level into a loss. so that we ended with -12.9 million, but which was still better than the -16.4 in 2017. On top of that, we have to add one effect, which unfortunately cannot repeat it. It is the profit we achieved by selling our plasma centers, our U.S. activities in the United States. You recall that as a prerequisite for this takeover, the U.S. government, in form of CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment and U.S. Investments, has forced us to sell off all our U.S. activities in order to have no national security concerns anymore in the United States. So we sold our plasma collection centers to Grifols, and the biggest part of this earnings after tax from discontinued operation in the amount of 194.6 million are the result of this sale, of this divestiture of U.S. assets. So the earnings after tax in Biotest Group, discontinued as well as continuing operations together, is 181.7 million, which is, of course, a huge number and has then an impact also on the equity ratio, as I will show you a little bit later on. If you look now on the special effects we had in 2017 as well as in 2018, we always show this kind of slide by explaining that our EBIT reported as with 10.6 million in 2018 is, of course, the result after having spent, as you can see, 53.4 million for Biotest Next Level. Biotest Next Level is our expansion project, but not only to double our capacity in Dreieich, but also to develop three new products in order to broaden our portfolio, to increase yields, and to have better new products. So the costs for commissioning the plant, as well as for developing those three new products in the clinical studies, those costs amounted to 53.4 and had been, of course, financed by the normal operating activities. And then we still have some monoclonal antibody activities. They are going down, but still in 2018 we spent 3.9 million for monoclonal antibodies. So if we would add those expenses back to the normal operating income, we would end up with 67.9 million, which then would be the operating result out of the sale of the 400 million products we have sold to our customers. Now, looking at the sales development, I can make it very brief and short. You see we have increases in all areas of the world due to increased sales of Intratect, our polyspecific immunoglobulin, and also human albumin, which was down in 2017, had been back on the normal levels in 2018. Talking about then our balance sheet, you see that the equity portion has gone up quite substantially. This is, of course, the effect of the sale of the assets in the United States, which we have sold with an extraordinary profit. So that has now led to an equity ratio of 47.5%, solid equity ratio. And that's, of course, the consequence of, as I said, mostly the sale of the businesses in the United States. Looking at the cash flow, it's nice and positive if you just would concentrate on the operating cash flow with 35.6 million. But then we had quite a lot of changes in our working capital position. So we spent almost 80 million for working capital. And in order to understand this huge number, it's worthwhile to look a little bit at the supply chain process of our products. As you know, we always start with plasma. And if we collect plasma or buy plasma, we put it in quarantine for 2 months. And then we start to fractionate it and produce it, purify it, fill it, pack the product. And then each and every lot has to be released by the Paul Ehrlich Institute, our authority. And then that may take up to 4-6 weeks, and then we can sell it. So starting from the purchase of plasma till we get final invoice from can send out an invoice to our customers, it takes 7 to 8 months. And if you now consider that 60% of our production costs, our cost of goods sold, is plasma costs, then you know that if you start buying and having plasma for your supply chain, that immediately if you want to sell more products, in the end, you start very early to build up your inventories, and that's the reason why we spent last year almost 80 million in building up inventories, and together with the higher sales, it has also led to higher receivables and other assets. So that contributes with another 29.3 million to this working capital change. We had a decrease of trade payables, and then other provisions contributed or cost us 800,000. So in the end, we end up with a working capital change of almost 80 million euros. Now, I mentioned already that our banks had taken advantage of the change of control and terminated the loan agreements. So we have replaced the existing loan arrangements by having gotten a shareholder loan from Tianjin in the amount of 290 million. And of course, we used parts of the proceeds from the sale of the U.S. assets in order to repay our banks, our promissory note holders. Coming to the upcoming annual shareholder meeting, May 7th, we will propose that we pay the minimum dividend, which means 0.04 per preference shares. The ordinary shareholder will get nothing. So this is due to the fact that we would like to keep the liquidity in-house in order to finalize our Biotest Next Level project as fast as possible. Talking about the guidance, you can expect that we will still increase our sales and revenues this year in the range of mid-single-digit percentage. Why not more? The reason is that we are operating at full capacity level, so we can only here and there with hyperimmunoglobulin sell a little more, and that should contribute this mid-single-digit percentage increase then in sales. With regard to earnings, as you have heard in the last years, earnings are heavily influenced by our spending for BNL, for commissioning the plant and continuing the phase III clinical studies for the three new products. And while we have spent 50 million-55 million in the last 2 years, we will probably increase the amount to 80 million-90 million in the now running fiscal year because, you know, we are almost close to completing the facility and starting with first technical runs, in order then to produce consistency batches, which are prerequisite for the market authorization for the new products. On top of that, you know, we have three running phase III studies, which are, of course, expensive and are more expensive as you include more patients, and therefore the numbers are going up as well. We still have some uncertainties with regard to the Middle East region. You know, we are very strong in the Middle East, so whatever will happen there has an immediate impact on our earnings situation. And of course, as we have said, we are still continuing to look for a partner who then would help us, for instance, in the development of new products and who would also be, for instance, our partner in the United States later on because we don't have any organization in the United States anymore but would like to sell our products there. So that's the reason why we are still in the phase of looking for a partner for our development products. So if we are successful with finding the partner, we should contribute, of course, to the R&D expenses. Then we end up probably in the EBIT range of -5 to +5 million at the end of 2019, depending on the increase of further expenses for BNL as well as of some crisis regions and what is going to happen there. And with that, I would conclude the numbers and figure story for 2018 and give Bernard Ehmer now the chance to talk a little bit more about strategy and the market environment.
Also, welcome from my side. And basically, when you hear this, you could see that so we have more or less two businesses. One is the existing business, which is profitable, and the other one is an emerging business with all these investments. And you could ask whether this makes sense or no sense. And so if you look, and this, you know, I looked also back, you know, the presentation we gave 3 or 4 years ago, starting from 2014 to 2017. And I looked at this, the same slide, you know, showing about the market growth. And what I can say, and I can even not only confirm, I can say that it was underestimated. So the market growth, you know, when I go back to 14 and 15, we always spoke about growth rate in the range of overall 6% globally. And in particular, we had in North America and Europe in the range of 4 to 5%. But the market is developing faster. So, for example, when you look at the numbers, the global IgG market reached a size of around about 190 tons in 2017. So we predicted that this number would only be reached in the year 2019. Yeah, so a couple years ago, this was a prediction with this growth rate. But in the meantime, the market is growing, and this has a positive side and negative sides. The positive side is, of course, the market is growing, and also prices are now going up. But the negative side is that not all patients can be served. So we already get complaints, the industry get complaints, that not all patients get these important therapies everywhere. So therefore, you know, this decision to go into the expansion and also to develop new products is right. But on the other side, we are facing the challenge with this investment period. So, and you know, it's the same what I said on the earlier slide is seen on the usage per capita. So if you see, for example, you know, I included a couple of green numbers on top of the actual numbers. So the actual numbers for, I just give you an example. The actual number for the United States in the year 2017 was 241 kilogram IVIG for 1 million population. And in the year 2015, it was 230. Australia, for example, grew from 169 to 238. But if you look also, for example, in Europe, and this is also impressive, if you look in France, the consumption in France increased in 2 years by 50%, from 99 kilogram per million population to 146. And in Germany, it's also growing 30%. So you see it not only in the overall figure, but you see it also in the relevant and the large markets, and these are high-priced markets. So overall, you know, I think one can confirm, you know, to everyone that the consumption is increasing worldwide. And certain indications are particularly growing in the major markets, like Europe and the United States. And this has several reasons, because, you know, the compounds, the validity of the compounds have been more accepted, and also the reimbursement is secured for that. So, okay, you have to click several times. So just to give you a brief overview about the products we have currently and what will we add in the future. So on the left side, you see, you know, we have this IgG called Intratect 5%, 10%. Then we have a couple of specialty products. So lower volume, higher prices. This is, I come to this in a minute. Then we have hemophilia, so factor 8 and factor 9, and tumor albumin. And then with BNL, we will include a new IgG. This has a better yield. The production process is optimized. And this product will then also be approved in the United States. And then we have this specialty product called IgM, trimodulin. This would be a unique product, not existing worldwide so far. And another one is a coagulation factor, fibrinogen. So, and if you look, for example, we have besides our products, IgG, IgG, albumin, and factor 8 and 9, we have these hyperimmunoglobulins against certain viral infections, other patients, for example, Cytotect, Varitect, Hepatect. This, everything is related to viral diseases which have an impact on certain conditions of patients, and I come to this in a minute. And here we are growing also at a lower rate in the range of around about 5% per year with the specialty products. The margin of the specialty products is much higher compared to the standard products. So, and I give you one example. For example, Cytotec, that is a product which is enriched with hyperimmune plasma from against this cytomegaly virus, and this will be used and can be used in these conditions. And there was last year also a study published which shows that the treatment with Cytotect in patients undergoing stem cell transplantation reduces the infections with cytomegaly, but it's not about the infections, it's about the impact of these infections when patients are undergoing transplantation. You know, you have two things in mind, that the transplantation is successful, that the organ is preserved, and the second one is the patient surviving. So, and the study shows that number one, the transplantation outcome is better, and the patient has no rejection or reduced rejection of the organ and prolonged survival. That's one example, and this is where we are also focusing on the market with from our sales force, that we are visiting in particular also transplantation centers. Okay. Not only that, you know, but, you know, in the industry, you have to do a lot of things you don't see on the outside. But there was a directive, and this directive made perfect sense from the European Union. So, anti-counterfeiting of pharmaceuticals. Just give you a number. As a falsified medicines, either here as a wrong quality or as active substance is not active, that's a serious threat to safety of the patients. And I give you now one number. Have you any idea how many patients die, how many people die per year due to falsified medicines? 1 million. 1 million people die per year because they get falsified medicines.
Globally.
Yeah, of course. No, but you know, this is... so therefore, this request from the authorities, this initiative, made perfect sense. So, and all the companies were forced, and of course we had an internal project, you know, and I think the date was February 8th, if I'm not wrong, that from this day onwards, we were obliged that we had that we had to implement the so-called serialization. So all products which left, which are coming into the market, you know, they have this a traceable number on the outer package. You see it here. And so this is, goes into the database. And then hospitals, cross-sellers, pharmacies, they have access to this database. And they can check when they receive these products, in general all products, whether this is originated from a company or whether it has other sources. So, and they're obliged to verify that, you know, when they check it in and when it's given to patients. So this was it was really demanding for the entire industry, and we put a lot of efforts behind it, of course, for good reasons, because we were obliged. But on the other side, just think about the number of patients dying due to falsified medicines. Unbelievable. Okay. So, in addition, you know, coming back to the regular business, you know, we say, all right, we need to expand our plasma centers. So, last year we opened two new centers in the Czech Republic, and another one we took over January 1st, 2019, in Hanover. Now we have 20 centers in Europe, and we continue to build new plasma centers in Europe. So this is just a touch and feel how it looks, this plasma center. And there are always debates about plasma centers. And I think, you know, if you visit a plasma center, if you talk to donors, then very often these are young people, students. So they are very well monitored. And data is collected also on the so-called health of the donors. It's not that they are healthy, but they stay healthy after they had the plasmapheresis. So it's, of course, it's a prerequisite that they're healthy, and this is checked. But of course, we have to take care that, you know, the plasma donation does not hurt them. You know, and our organization, the organization from the industry, the so-called PPTA, they have the largest database in the world, you know, because we are obliged to collect data and then report the data to PPTA, and PPTA collects this. Here you can clearly see that the donor health, or the post-plasmapheresis, is not worse than before donation, sometimes even better, because they are better monitored. Yeah. But this is a debate outside, you know, because there are always one or the other donor, you know, which, you know, there are always one or the other exception, and these exceptions are always brought to the attention of the media and to the outside world. But we as an industry, you know, we are, of course, responsible, you know, to take care that the donor are healthy after, that we do not hurt them. Okay, so the plasma centers, you know, if you go into these kind of plasma centers, you know, you see that, you know, it's very well organized, very well structured, and that the people, you know, take care of the donors. So research development project, you know, today we have the product in development on the left side. What will be our new projects? I go to the right side. So it's a IgG next generation, and here we are developing also another formulation, subcutaneous. And then we are also focusing on neurologic indications. So autoimmune diseases and patients suffering from neurologic diseases. Then the second one is trimodulin, that's the IgM concentrator, I come to that, and also fibrinogen, I'll also say a few words. And then we have below, and the lower part, we have in late-stage research a hemophilia product, which has a low, which has a long, prolonged half-life, has a low immunogenicity, and it should also be given subcutaneously. And then that's, these three components are essential. So now to IgG next generation. We call it, this is a master product for our new production plant. And here, we, as I said, new process and higher yield, also higher output. What did we do in the last year? So we completed two phase three studies. We completed the first study in the United States and Europe, so all patients are in, and we are just observing the patients until they complete 1 year treatment. And the second study was done in Europe, and the study is completed, and we are now in the evaluation. We should get the data in the not-too-distant future, so in April. We will have the data of the second study, and of course we will then also issue a short press release, you know, how the outcome was. Now, you know, the neurologic indications we are discussing with the FDA is the study design, and the study should start in the year 2019. So, and everyone could ask, you know, why are you developing a new product? I said on one side, it's we have a higher yield. It's a more modern technology. What we are doing, we are going to increase the safety even more. You know, we need always high quality, but we're increasing it more. We are adding certain columns to reduce certain factors in the plasma, you know, the clotting factors, that there is an even reduced thrombogenetic activity. And also we have a new methodology also for even increasing the margin for safety even more. You know, we are already beyond what we are asking, and we are going a step further. So, and so this will be a state of the more than state of the art product when it's coming on the market. So with trimodulin, you know, everyone is talking about viruses, talking about severe infections. And this IgM-enriched immunoglobulin has a relevant effect on all these different pathogens, whether it's a bacteria or viruses, and also on the toxin which are released by these viruses and bacteria. So it has a clear immune modulation effect, and I'm coming on the next slide to the study and to the indication we are following closely. So these are patients which will go in a phase three. They have a severe pneumonia, and they will be treated with antibiotics. In addition, they receive trimodulin, and you know, the patients for the studies, they are required that they are really seriously ill, and they are in the intensive care unit. And the clinical outcome is we intend to show that we are going to reduce the mortality of the patients. And we did already a phase two study, And in the phase 2 study, we saw a reduction in mortality by 50%. Also, we reduced the mortality in the phase 2 by 50%. And now we are doing a phase 3, larger study, which would then lead to registration in Europe and the United States. So this is a unique product, and here, therefore, we say, you know, we like to have a partner also for that, and we believe that, you know, that it's attractive enough to find a partner, at least a distribution partner, for this molecule. Okay, fibrinogen, it's also a coagulation factor. You see the market increase from 2016 to 2030. You know, the fibrinogen use will increase, and it's increasing. Today, only a couple of countries, in particular Germany, you know, they're using fibrinogen. That's a specific factor in the blood, you know, which will go down when you have a heavy blood loss. This goes down first before other factors are going down. And currently, usually if the people are not giving fibrinogen, if they're giving something else, then it's not a targeted therapy. It's not a specific therapy. So the best thing in this situation, by in severe blood loss, is always to start with fibrinogen. And in the past, it was not done because there was not a good diagnostic available. Yeah, so if you have to go, if you see a patient is bleeding during surgery or, you know, during birth, you know, so then the physicians, you know, they need to act immediately. So they do everything to stop bleeding, and they do not have the time to measure fibrinogen. It was not available, you know, if you have to wait for a couple of hours and then someone is bleeding, you know, so it's, so now, you know, with this device, with this point of care diagnostic available, device available, now you can measure it on the spot, and if you see that the fibrinogen is going down, you just replace it. And this is more and more done, in particular in Germany and in other German-speaking countries, and you see that in these countries, fibrinogen use is going up. And so it's sometimes you see you need not only a therapy, you need also the diagnostic to tailor therapy. So, and we are using this in our clinical study, which is ongoing, and you see also this will be then on the market, and there is a market need. So, short summary to our P&L program, what is the clear rationale behind it? Number one, we are doing this because we'd like to globalize all our products. So IgG needs also to be sold in the United States, so this will be global products. Then we say we need more products out of 1 liter plasma. Plasma is expensive. 60% of our costs are plasma costs. If you can have more efficiency out of 1 liter plasma, makes sense. So today we have the 3 products, each product coming out from 1 liter. In the future we will have 5 products coming out of 1 liter plasma. This reduces the cost and increases the profitability. And of course, you know, a specialty plasma products like trimodulin, fibrinogen, and also this hyperimmunoglobulin. So, and we moved forward, and you know also that we had in the year, at the end of 2017, we had a challenge. You know, there was, was one of the Späne, wie nennt sich das? There were particles, you know, when we tested these pipes and all our systems, then we noticed that there were, before commissioning, we noticed there were particles in the system, and then we had more or less a couple of months of interruption because we had to clean this stuff, and there is no blueprint how you clean it. So we worked with a specialty company together, and we were successful to get rid of all this stuff and go back to the to usual business. And so last year we qualified the equipment for IgG Next Step. It was qualified and the ownership was given then to us. So now we are responsible for that. We also qualified our major equipment, and the final validation for the IgG Next Gen has been started. And we are preparing for the fourth quarter the inspection by our authority which will be a final inspection already for this part of the facility. So the focus, you know, on this needs to be completed in time, and we are making good progress. So it's a short summary, you know, Biotest Next Level. So this investment part, you know, is progressing. So reasoning, I gave you the reasoning behind why are we doing that. You know, because the market is attractive, because we will have new products, and the product portfolio is more profitable. You know, five products out of 1 liter plasma. The clinical trials for these products are ongoing. Two phase three studies have been completed in the year 2018, and the others for fibrinogen are ongoing. And the IgM will start. The phase three will start this year. And we, of course, we need to secure plasma, and we are continue to open new plasma centers in Europe. Thank you very much for your attention.
So this, we can start the Q&A session. It would be helpful if you could mention your name and your company if you do have a question. Do we have a question? Dennis?
Okay. We have not included any negative impact out of the Middle East developments, whatever might politically happen in the Middle East. We will continue our Middle East business as usual, but, you know, if U.S. sanctions for Iran, you know, gets screwed up even more, that might even have a negative impact on our sales numbers, and that would then, you know, reduce the EBIT guidance, as I said. So up to now, we suppose that we can continue as we have done in 2018. I mentioned that we will spend 80 to 90 million for BNL, and you can split it. It's roughly 45 million for ramp-up costs. Ramp-up costs, that means we have already a full team, or not a full team, but more than 180 people exclusively working, you know, in this facility, in this BNL plant. And you have to pay them, of course. They are commissioning the things. They start with test runs, water runs, and then consistency batches. We have the depreciation of the building. We have to, you know, have all this media and power utilities are running already. So that contributes. So we have a full set of, you know, full resources already for this building available, and that amounts to 45 million, and the remaining 35 to 40 are then spent for the clinical studies. Fibrinogen is ongoing. One will be finished, but then we still have to write a report. Second one, the treat of IgG, the treatment is ongoing for 1 year. The patients are treated, and then we will start also for trimodulin, the phase 3 study. So that cost us the amount I just mentioned, altogether 80 to 90 million in this year. I hope you won't see a less negative number, because increasing working capital is a clear indication that we would like to increase our sales, as we mentioned, you know, and especially by commissioning or starting the BNL activities in 2021 with first sales, you know, we have to take care that we have enough plasma, you know, to fill the vessels and then really start to produce it. So you will see also in the years to come an increase in our working capital, and therefore the cash will be, you know, heavily burdened by the amounts we need for building up, buying plasma, for instance, and start the production. That was the reason why I showed this long lead time of 7 to 8 months.
With the NL to potentially maybe sell in U.S. and things like that. So could you comment on that?
Okay, so is it BPL?
BPL, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, so let's start with a second, because everything depends from each other. So initially it was really planned, and we started the post, let's call it post-merger integration. You know, we had the conversations with BPL. We had already working groups. To do that, and then Tianjin said, okay, they intend to do as a first step to contribute biotest into RAAS Shanghai, and not both together. You know, we were working, intensively. Our finance department was heavily burdened in addition last year. To that, we were working with financial advisors and consultancy companies, to have all these reports available, to do this contribution in kind. And the first, it was planned only biotest. And then, Kreat and Din Raas was also approached by Grifols. The intention, is quite simple. The intention of Grifols is, they would like to have access to the Chinese market, would also like to have here a kind of control a little bit, means, at least about quality and about this and that. And Grifols, offered, that they would bring in, as part of their Grifols diagnostic solution business. And to not to overload the Chinese SEC, and also to make things a little bit easier, also with evaluation of this stuff, they said, okay, let's do first this GDS contribution in kind, and then as a next step, and this has been on various occasions repeated, the second step should be biotest and other parts of GDS into RAAS Shanghai. So it's and. So this means this will be will have a delay of about, I would say, to be realistic, 6 months to 9 months, not 4 to 6 months. So this SPA was signed in February after Chinese New Year, was signed, and this means they started then this approval processes, SEC and Chinese and United States and etc. So if we calculate now 6 to 9 months, it's about August. At the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, I think the second step should happen. So it was always mentioned, not only in the public, but also to us.
Thank you.
Do we have another question?
Herr Schlote von Solventis, jetzt quäle ich mich mit Englisch, aber what does it mean to the domination agreement or possible domination agreement if this biotest is put into RAAS, Shanghai RAAS?
For the time being, we don't see any initiative from Korea or Tianjin's side to pursue a domination agreement, so we don't see any domination agreement in the foreseeable future.
I have an additional question regarding clinical development phase 3. You said two studies are ready, phase 3 was done. Do you have any view on the data already? Can you explain?
Yeah, for example, in the second study, you know, the second study is a short study. So the last patient was treated in December 23rd, I think. And yesterday we were informed by our R&D colleagues, you know, that the database is closed. You know, so we expect in April, beginning of May, we expect the high-level data. And for us, the high-level data is relevant. You know, we just like to see whether it works and whether it's safe. We have no indication that it's not working, and we have no indication that it's not safe. But of course, we like to see it. So this data will be available at the end of April, beginning of May, for the second study. The first study, you know, we have almost all adult patients have been treated for more or less a year. You need to treat all patients for a year. But we have 18 children included, and the children came in a little later. So therefore, we will have this data only in 2020. Because the last child came in, I think, February 2nd, 2019. So the last patient of this study. But the adult patients, you know, are ongoing, and we have not heard relevant things. Of course, we do not do an analysis. We are not allowed to do analysis in between. But of course, you hear from safety whether there are certain safety concerns or so. Nothing. So it seems to run smoothly. Yeah.
Then regarding fibrinogen, there's this point of care diagnostic you mentioned. Who is producing this equipment? Do you know?
Yeah, that's a third party. It's the company is called Rotec.
Okay. Rotemtec. Yeah. Okay.
Hi. Can you, for 2019, can you give us a guidance for adjusted EBIT then?
Yeah, add 80 to 90 million on the minus 5 to plus 5, and then you have the adjusted EBIT.
And if you were to contribute, if Create were to contribute Biotest into Shanghai RAS, do you think there'd be synergies from that for you guys?
You know, why are you doing things? You know, the point is, for example, that's easier access to China. Yeah. So in China, you know, with, for example, if you look at one of the earlier slides, you see there's a need for better treatment, to be honest, for better treatment in hemophilia. There's a need of more treatment with IgG. And there's not enough albumin available in China. So this will be, of course, synergies. Then the other point is about what's about the technologies. Does Shanghai have always the best technologies, or could they benefit also from our technologies, etc.? So I think of course, the answer is, of course.
Okay, but I understand that the Grifols agreement with Shanghai RAS gives them, is it exclusivity to market Grifols products through the Shanghai RAS network into China? So how will that interplay with you guys?
Okay, so Grifols products are already on the market in China, so they have just another distributor.
It doesn't prevent you guys selling your product through Shanghai RAS?
No, when we, you know, we would say, you know, there are two things. Number one, it's albumin, and it's IgM. And Grifols does not have an IgM. And albumin, there's a high need. More or less 60% of the albumin in China is coming from outside China. Yeah. So, and if you have a local distributor, if you have a local firm which is associated to you, you have a huge advantage.
And at the moment, are you able to cooperate with the other sort of CREA entities, with Shanghai RAS and BPL, or is it all very much independent?
Of course, you know, it's arm length, you know, so if we do anything, you know, we have agreements in place, you know, we can talk, but it's just, you know, it's competitors, yeah, so far. And if we are doing anything, we have master service agreements, you know, we can only work through that, you know, because we have to have arm lengths.
Okay. And I know in the past you've given sort of long-term guidance post the next level project coming on board. Is that still valid, or do you have sort of updated sort of guidance as to what biotests could look like on the financial perspective at the end of once biotech's next level is on board?
No, that's still valid. We haven't
updated that. So is it sort of 15% margin and
yes.
A billion?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. You know, and this was, you know, I think we shared in one of the other meetings, you know, that just, you know, if you look at the revenues and the profitability out of 1 liter plasma currently compared to the revenues coming out of 1 liter plasma, including profitability, you know, this will double.
Sure. So when do you think we'll see sort of that run rate number? What's, is it sort of 2023 or?
We start selling products out of BNL in 2021, and then there's a ramp up, so your number 2023 is a good number.
Sure.
Good year, yes.
For IgG first, and then you'll get the IgG first, then IgM and fibrinogen following.
And how should we think about your long-term capital structure? Because obviously at the moment you're funded with the shareholder loan. Do you plan to put in place a more sort of permanent capital structure, or will you wait for the injection to Shanghai RAAS? How will that work?
So currently, yes, we are in discussions, of course, with our shareholder to provide us additional funds for further needs in order to finalize BNL. That's one side, and as soon as BNL is really starting to produce, then we would look to the normal banks for normal working capital facility.
Werner Pfeifferling from Knösel & Rogge. Question on the shareholder loan. Has this interest rate changed much from the KfW and the bank loans compared to the current loan nowadays?
Yes. Sorry, I didn't get...
Interest rate you're going to pay for
we
the shareholder 2. Loan.
We paid 2.5% interest rate on the shareholder loan.
And before that was, I mean, could have...
A little less because the shareholder loan is subordinated.
Do we have another question, Mr. Schlote?
Yes, you mentioned, Dr. Ima, that BNL, the products will be sold globally, including US market. And my understanding is that in order to sell products in the US, you need the US plasma. Is that still valid, and where do you get the plasma from?
Yeah, so we in the past, you know, we had our own plasma sources in the United States. Now we are buying plasma from the United States. Yeah, and of course, you know, there are independent plasma providers out of the United States. There are other companies we are buying from. We are buying from this kind of Red Cross in the United States. So we have a plan to buy plasma, or we buy plasma from PPL, we are buying plasma from Grifols, we are buying plasma from LFB. Yeah, so, of course, we are working on these long-term contracts.
So you can, in the production process, you can clearly say this is coming from...
We have to, absolutely.
Okay.
So we are using lines. So we are using U.S. plasma only for these products which would go to the United States. And if albumin is going to China, we are using also U.S. plasma. But for all the rest, we are using European plasma.
Does that mean that BNL is only filled with U.S. plasma? Or?
No, it's that part of... part. What did you say? Whether BNL is what?
It's only for...
No. Because we are also selling, you know, not all product is going to the United States. You know, also of course, I think 50-50, more or less, I think.
Yeah.
Around about 50% will be to our remaining markets. And you see that the markets are growing steadily. Yeah, so it's... this is really also kind of not surprise. So it's higher than predicted. You know, people thought that the growth rate in Europe and the United States is slowing down a little bit to the 5% range, but it increased compared to the predictions.
So there's a high need, you know, and as I mentioned earlier, today we are already, also we as an industry, we are already facing sometimes the issue that not all patients can be served.
Is a shortage on the capacity or on the plasma?
The capacity question. That's a capacity question currently. Okay. Maybe in 5 years or in 10 years, there might be also a source issue. Maybe. But for the time being, it's more capacity. And also, you know, I look at the slide, you know, and if someone... I have also a slide, if you go back to our presentation, the year 2014. You know, so we showed on page 18 a slide saying that the headline was no oversupply in immunoglobulin expected. So we estimated that in the year 2020, there would be 200 tons provided to the market, and that the fractionation capacity is going up, because in these days was a question, is there no overcapacity? Yeah, and now this 200 kilo number in 2020 is not true anymore, because we had already in 2017 190 kilogram and tons, sorry. So it's currently, it's a capacity problem.
I heard that also your competitors are increasing capacity, and
absolutely.
Is there the risk that there might be overcapacity for some short time, or for 1-2 years or something?
No, so a couple, I think 2 years ago, a new facility, I'm not sure which company, whether that was CSL, one of the bigger companies, they brought a new relevant capacity on the market, had no impact. There is ongoing, but you know, if we match the increased demand with the increase in capacity, there is no mismatch.
Do we have another question?
Edmund, sorry. You're now producing 5 products out of 1 liter plasma, or in future, the BNL when it's finished and so far. And is this state of the art, or are some competitors already getting more products out of 1 liter plasma?
Okay, 5 is good. 6 is better. So CSL, I think they have 6. You know, but it's not just only the product. It's really does. Will I always get out of all plasma 6 products? Yeah, and there's a need time. So, but 5 is very good. 5 is good.
Can you talk a little bit about how a partnership agreement could look like?
Yes, it could look like that the partner would contribute to R&D expenses and then would be entitled also to sell the product, and especially we are looking for somebody who is capable to sell it in the United States, because we don't have any U.S. organization anymore.
Basically, it's standard. Okay, so distribution partner, we expect royalties at the very end. We expect in-between milestones, it's completion of certain milestones, for example, approvals or completion of activities. And as a starting point, of course, the starting point is contribution to R&D expenses. And in the beginning, upfront payment. So this is what we are discussing.
I think the initial plan was for Grifols to have voting control over Shanghai RAAS in the initial deal they agreed.
No, sorry. This was never. This was a speculation from the press. You know, this was never ever mentioned. And you know, and they had this discussion, because number one, it would have not been allowed. Therefore, the people knew that. So it was that they're going to contribute, and that it was the intention that the current shareholders, Kreat and the other one, that they keep the majority. Yeah. So what's going to happen in the future is something else. Yeah, we don't know because we are not part of these discussions. But it was never mentioned, you know, in the discussions. In particular, also when they made publications, as official publication, it was an interpretation of publications, but it was not the original press release, neither from Grifols nor from Ross Shanghai. No, I saw it. We saw it also, you know, and then we followed up, you know, but it was not the fact.
Well, this is just what Grifols were telling people, so.
But definitely not in this instance. Definitely not in the first instance. You know, maybe it's their intention for some time in the future, but not now. But, you know, I'm not authorized to talk about it because I'm not involved in these discussions.
Do we have another question? I think we've come to the end of our conference. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you very much for coming. And we would like to invite you for a light lunch next door. Thank you very much.